Welcome to the Awakened Parent Project, Conscious Conversations, Empowered Parenting, with me, Susan Dolce. It's time to open our hearts and our minds to what it means to be a parent, exploring and expanding the ways we communicate, validate, and show up daily for our kids. With a parent-centric focus, you learn to become more present, a better active listener, more reflective, more engaged, and mutually empowered. Parenting isn't about perfection. It's about presence, honesty, self-compassion, unconditional love, and conscious communication. The Awakened Parent Project starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Awakened Parent Project. I'm your host, Susan Dolce. I'm a certified parent coach with the Jai Institute for Parenting, and it's my hope that you will find this a safe space to journey on a path of both practical and spiritual self-exploration. From the time my first daughter was born in 1994, I've been driven by a vision where children are nurtured both physically and spiritually by adults who are present, grounded, and empowered. I believe that conscious communication, self-exploration, and self-forgiveness are the tools that enable parents to foster deep, lasting connections with their children. Parenting isn't about perfection. It's about presence, honesty, self-compassion, unconditional love, and conscious communication. And today's topic is one that many parents, I believe, are struggling with. And that's not only the appropriate amount of screen time for our teens, but the general impact of social media use on teens today. I am welcoming back to the show Richard Capriola to help us unpack this, what I would call, very murky topic. He recently retired from the Menninger Clinic, and he has been a mental health and substance abuse counselor for over two decades. He has treated adolescents and adults diagnosed with substance abuse issues, and he is the author of The Addicted Child, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Substance Abuse, which is available on Amazon. You can also get it on your Kindle, I think. Can you get it on Kindle?
Yes, it's available on Kindle.
And his website is www.helptheaddictedchild.com. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this topic that, as you noted, is very concerning to a lot of parents when we look at how much time and what social apps our kids are using. So it's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this topic.
Well, thank you. I've got adult children, so I'm kind of on the other side of this. But I remember when I think it was like 2008. So my oldest daughter was 14. She was a freshman in high school and she wanted a Facebook account. And I was kind of like, isn't that for like older people? Isn't that for like college kids or whatever? Isn't that why it was developed? And I knew, I remember there was like, an age range of like, or an age limit of 13. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I suppose you're in high school now, you know, I will experiment with this. And I remember my biggest concern being like my concern about her being potentially stalked by pedophiles, like being groomed through Facebook in that way. And it never even occurred to me all the myriad of issues now, like cyberbullying and all of that. Yeah. So with that, like, what are the social media platforms that are popular today and how many teens are using them?
Well, there's a number of social apps out there. It seems like there's one being developed every day out there. But some of the more popular ones are Instagram, which is owned by Facebook and attracts around 22 million teenagers. Facebook is not really all that used by teenagers. Roughly about 5 million teens are using Facebook. But the one that sort of rises to the top of the list is TikTok. That is, it's more popular than Instagram. It's heavily used by teenagers. Over 600 million people worldwide are using TikTok. I have a granddaughter that uses TikTok. So for TikTok, I would put at the top of the list as the most popular application that teenagers are using today.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand the Facebook thing, because even my kids will tell me, my 20-something year old children will say, that's for only the old people use Facebook anymore. and actually, I really, to be completely transparent, I stopped promoting my business on Facebook, and primarily focused on Instagram, just because that's where the young audience is, like the people right. having children or young adults. So yeah. I'm just curious, why did TikTok rise in popularity the way it did? Do you know?
I think it's an application that allows teenagers to create their own world, so to speak. It's video, it's audio. You know, my granddaughter, for example, gets into what's called cosplay, which is costume mm-hmm. playing, where they dress up in costumes and sing songs and do things like that. And that's very appealing to a lot of teenagers. Other people like it because of the ability to post information, to post jokes, to goof around and make silly comments. And it's a combination between, I think, the visual part of it and the audio and the music, which all comes together to create a very creative, interesting environment for teenagers.
Do you think the, because it really, I feel like, and maybe it's just me with my limited knowledge, it really rose to popularity during the pandemic.
Yes, I think a lot of social media use rose, increased due to the pandemic when kids were isolated at home. They were no longer attending classes or engaging with their peers on a personal one-on-one basis or in groups, and they weren't participating in extracurricular activities such as sports. They were pretty well isolated at home, and their primary communication with their peers was through either social media apps or their phones or text messages. I think that isolating environment created a large increase in teenagers turning to these applications. So I think you're absolutely right there.
I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the syndrome, the TikTok Tourette syndrome, but I'm curious also if you've seen, like, I know it was on YouTube, like stupid challenges, right? That these teens would do, like they would have like marshmallow eating challenges or just whatever goofy, you know, jumping skateboard, silly challenges. But do you think that, I guess personally, I'm very curious about these TikTok challenges and how those have impacted kids.
Well,
I mean, some are fun. Some are dance challenges, like dance with your mom.
Yeah.
But some of them.
Some of them can be very creative. Some of them, as you noted, can be entertaining, and they can actually be, you know, fun. And you know, I guess kids find them very attractive. But they can also become more concerning when they involve activities that could potentially be harmful. They may seem like they're funny. They may seem like they're gimmicks, but potentially they could be harmful. Maybe they're stunts, maybe they're, challenges, things like that. You have to be very careful about what you're looking on these applications and how they're affecting kids and what they're actually promoting kids to do.
So how does one do that? I mean, is it just, I mean, really, like if I had a teenager today, I think I would feel that I needed to be on a high level of you know, readiness and watching and overseeing, which I didn't feel like that kind of a parent. I know a lot of parents use that. I know I'm digressing a bit, but like that 360 app. So mm-hmm. they know what their children are doing 360, 24/7, all like what they're doing and where they are all the time.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't even know where to begin to like monitor that in my children.
Well, I think that's a feeling that many parents have. Where do I begin? What do I do? How do I, you know, responsibly, you know, take charge of this situation? And it's a fine line, you know, for many parents to walk. I can tell you some of the recommendations that Mayo Clinic has made in this area. And the first one is to set reasonable limits. You know, talk about how to avoid social media interfering with activities such as sleep time, such as meals, and such as homework. Mm-hmm. Encourage a bedtime and sleep routine, and keep cell phones and tablets out of teens' bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Another
one of my very best friends has, she has seven children, but her three youngest, who are 14 and between 15 and 13, she takes their phones and their tablets every night before they go
yes.
to bed.
Yes. Yes. And my mother's, my children's grandmother's grandmother, mother does the same thing. She shuts them all off and actually takes possession of them, has them starting at 9 o'clock at night. So, you know, that's one example of a limit that you can place on your child's use of these cell phones and applications. Another recommendation was to monitor your teen's accounts. You know, let teens know that you're going to regularly check in on their accounts and make sure that you follow through on that. You know, check into the applications that they're using and what they're doing.
I'm taking notes.
another recommendation is explain what's not okay. You know, discourage things like gossiping and spreading rumors and bullying or damaging someone's reputation. Talk to your child about how that's not acceptable. That's not something you will tolerate. And talk about what is appropriate and what is safe on social media so that they know what's not permitted and what is permitted. Also, encourage face-to-face contact with their friends, especially for teens that are vulnerable to social anxiety. So encourage your teens to, your children to have face-to-face activities with their friends, not be so consumed with, you know, social interaction through the media. Encourage them to be with their friends, to talk with their friends face-to-face. Another one is to talk to your children about social media. Talk about their habits. Ask how your teen is going to use social media and how does it make them feel. And I think it's also important to remind your children that social media is full of a lot of unrealistic images, that many times what they're seeing and what they're hearing on social media is not true. It's not accurate. And don't just assume that, you know, that what you're seeing is real. Because many times it's not. And we'll talk a little bit about the Facebook research here, but it's very important that teens understand, you know, that some of the stuff that they're seeing is made up, it's not real. And then finally, use the parental controls, the parent controls that are available to you. And if you don't know what those are, you can check with your internet provider and learn about what those parental controls are. When our grandchildren come to visit, for example, my wife will get on her phone and through the internet and will shut down their access to the internet at a certain time during the night, whether it's 10 o'clock or midnight or whatever it is. So just know that as a parent, you do have access to those controls where you can monitor and take control of when of the hours and the days and the times when your child can be on the internet. So if you don't know what those controls are, check with your internet provider and learn about what type of controls you have access to that will allow you to not only monitor, but set limits on the time and the days when your child can be using social media apps.
Yeah, another friend of mine has there's actually a device that she has their computers hooked up to. I forget what it's called. Looks like a cube. It might even be called a cube. And the one drawback to that, well, her one son got irate and smashed it. But besides that, is that it also, it caused her to also have to monitor her time. Yeah. Like she was like, you know, I can't say, I mean, granted, you're a child and I'm an adult, but it was like, at this time of the night, everything's going off. We have, you know, so it really made her take responsibility and be an example.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is learn about these apps. For example, do you know what the app's used for? You know, do some research and look into things like TikTok and Instagram and learn a little bit about, you know, what those applications are and how people are using them. Ask your child, how do you plan to use this application? What are your goals? What do you want to use this for? Why do you want it? And then, what sort of things do you plan to post? You know, mm-hmm. what are you going to be posting? You know, what are your interests? What do you want to post on here? So those are some discussions that you can have with your child before they start using the apps, or maybe just check in with them every once in a while to see how things are going.
We're going to take a quick break. There's still so much to cover. This is quite a bit to unpack, but it's super important, I think, especially now when mental illness and anxiety and depression is on the rise with teenagers. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Awakened Parent Project, and we'll be right back. We figured by the time we turned 50, we kind of had life figured out, but we were not prepared for the realities of midlife. Tune into And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife, with me, Susan Dolce.
And me, Leon Dyer, every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You're not alone in these challenges, and sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Find us at SusanDolce.com
and LeonDyer.com.
Jane Mack, and I'd love to tell you about the latest technology of the Volara company. I've been using the Volara company equipment, the air machines, since 1992, and I have found them to be totally successful in killing mold, mildew, and keeping your house fresh and clean. If you'd like more information on it, you can look at MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232.
Do you get stuck in that someday attitude, living the same day over and over again with no action? The Becoming You Show, big ideas that inspire, impact, and influence your life with Leah Rowling is for you. Tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Central on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will have you feeling inspired to take action with purpose and intention. For more information and to get in touch with me, visit www.leahrowling.com.
Are you ready to invest in your best self? Join Sabrina Wright as she shares tools for creating joy and balance in your life every single day. Sabrina is here to help you become your greatest advocate and empower you to make decisions that will help you live your best life. The Live the Good Life Show, connecting your physical and spiritual self. Every second Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find Sabrina at the Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, balance.com.
Welcome back to the Awakened Parent Project. I'm Susan Dolce, and today I'm joined by Richard Capriola, who is a mental health and substance abuse counselor for particularly teens. And we are talking about social media and social media use for our teens. What's good, what's not so good. We have a lot to unpack. And before the break, we were talking, Richard was going over several recommendations by the Mayo Clinic. And so which were all fabulous recommendations, by the way, like I'm sure every parent is curious as to where do I even start with this, because I think it can be very daunting and overwhelming. But what age do you recommend that children be exposed to social media? I think 13, which is pretty much the limit or the minimum for children, is like, that to me is ridiculous. They're like 13, they're babies. They're babies with budding hormones. Like, I just don't understand why, like, I don't get it. I would, please enlighten me. What do you think?
Well, it's a question I think every parent struggles with. You know, what age is appropriate? What age should I allow my child to start using some of these apps? And every child is different. Every situation is different. You know your child as a parent better than anyone. You know how responsible or irresponsible they've been. You know their history. But many of the cyber experts recommend that the minimum age for getting onto Facebook is around age 13, 14. For things like Snapchat, they are more concerned about the kids being too young, and they recommend for things like Snapchat a minimum age of 16. So somewhere between 13 and 16, depending on the application, depending on your child's maturity level and how responsible they've been in the past, I think a parent needs to make that judgment for themselves. But I would be very hesitant at letting any child younger than age 13 get on these applications.
So I hope I'm not throwing you a curveball here, but what came to my mind when we were talking about the recommendations is there is like a dopamine hit when these kids get on. And that's why, I mean, like you can be addicted to scrolling. Sometimes I even find myself that like I'm either bored or I like want connection. I'm seeking connection. So I'm going through, you know, trying to find my relatives and what they've posted and is there any science behind that? Can kids get addicted to the dopamine hits that is caused by this?
Well, you bring up two very interesting topics. The first is kids pay attention to what their parents are doing. So if you as a parent are addicted to being on your devices, if you're sitting there, you know, during dinner or you know, during the evening hours and you're glued to your iPhone, whether you're texting or reading news or on a social app, kids pay attention to that. And they see that you're being consumed by your time. In fact, you're spending most of your time, you know, glued to an app. And then you sort of question, well, why are they spending so much time? But they're paying attention to what you're doing, too. So you have the responsibility to model that behavior to them, whether it's, you know, how long you're on apps and when during what times you're on apps. Mm-hmm. So kids have they're very, very much paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, now I do it because none of my children are home and I miss them. So, what are my children up to?
The other question that you brought up was, you know, are these applications addictive? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because one of the findings of the Facebook research that was done was that teenagers know that these applications are addictive. They know it. And what they've said is they have a desire to spend less time on the applications, but they also say that they don't have enough self-control to change their behavior, to change their scrolling behavior. So the teenagers, interestingly enough, are very perceptive. They understand and know that these applications have become addictive for themselves, that they're spending too much time on them. And they have a desire to pull back the amount of time, but they can't do it. And that's classic addictive behavior. You know, and there is this rush, as you pointed out, of dopamine in the brain, which is a pleasure chemical. You know, we feel pleasure because we have dopamine neurotransmitter in our brain, which causes us to feel pleasure. And kids get this dopamine rush when they're on these applications, or even when they get a text message that comes through and makes its little text sound. So there's a lot of characteristics to addictive behaviors that we can find in social media applications.
So interestingly, when you mentioned that, I got a, when I was on Facebook, when I was on the old people app, they asked me to conduct a survey. And one of the first questions was, you know, what's the parent company name of Facebook? And I was, because I'm old, I was a few generations back, and I said Alphabet. And then it's like, well, it's Meta. So then, and then they went through like asking me if I feel that my life is better or worse, like different sorts of scenarios, yeah, is better or worse because of using Facebook. Do I feel it's harmed me in any way? You know, am I neutral? Am I, you know, it was the always somewhat, you know, neutral, whatever. And it was like, it probably took me about 15 minutes to go through it, just, you know, to really give those questions some thought, like, how is it really impacting my life? Now, granted, I'm not a teenager, but I'm interested that they offered the survey, one, and two, that they offered it on Facebook, which, like I said, I keep calling it the old people app, but we know that it's that, like, that most teenagers and young adults don't go on Facebook. They will cross post. They'll go to Instagram and they'll cross post to Facebook so their old relatives can see what they're doing. But I didn't see a survey like that on Instagram, where those questions might be better, you know, might be more important to ask the younger set.
Yeah. Well, Facebook did do some research on, you know, how these social apps are affecting teenagers. And I don't know that they wanted it to become all public. It did become public. But some of the findings are interesting, if not alarming. For example, 60% of girls and 40% of boys said that they experience negative social comparison, okay, comparing themselves to others. About 37% of girls said that they feel pressured to look perfect in their posts. They feel pressure to look perfect, again, comparing themselves to others. About a third of the girls say that the content that they're viewing makes them feel worse about themselves. And that's why it's so important that as parents, we let these kids know that what they're seeing on these images are not always accurate. Some of them can be photoshopped and made up. But about a third of girls admitted that what they're seeing on these social apps actually makes them feel worse about themselves.
Yeah.
And 50% of users reported feeling unattractive. Who say that they feel unattractive, said that the feelings began on Instagram. So 50% of them who said that they felt unattractive said it came from what they're seeing on Instagram. And 14% of boys said Instagram makes them feel worse about themselves. So, you know, this is important information for parents to be aware of. And for teens who already are struggling with some type of mental health issue, social media may actually make those feelings, you know, more worse or intensify them. You mentioned earlier about the mental health issue among our teenagers. That has been a crisis that's been going on for 10 years prior to the pandemic. And then the pandemic came along and sort of ignited it. But we've had a crisis in teenage mental health for a long, long time. The pandemic affected teenage mental health. It affected adult mental health. But these social applications, we need to be careful with them. And we need to talk to our kids and to our teenagers about how their use of social media is making them feel. Because so many are reporting that it doesn't make them feel very good about themselves. So, you know, have those conversations with your kids. Check in with them from time to time. See how they're doing. On my book's website, I have a blog article about how the pandemic affected teenage mental health. And there's a series of 10 very, very quick questions that you can ask your child to check in on their mental health. Very simple questions. You know, for example, one of them is, you know, if your feelings were weather, what kind of a day would it be outside? And you can make some of these for younger kids, you know, interesting and fun. But it's important to check in with how are our kids doing in the mental health area from time to time. And if they're on these social apps, just recognize that this research is showing that for some kids, these applications are not making them feel very good about themselves.
Yeah. And but to be a parent who maybe struggles themselves with talking about their feelings and not being knowing how to express it or share, to even get to a place where they're comfortable reaching out to their child, because it's just not how they were raised. Like yeah. I could countless times that, you know, my kids have said, How come these people don't know how to talk about their feelings? I'm like, they weren't raised that way. Right. And so, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we're almost built to not talk about our feelings, to not share our feelings. And if you're a parent and you grew up in an environment where, you know, that wasn't encouraged and you didn't have very many experiences, positive experiences in sharing feelings, that's going to be a real challenge for you to step up and talk about your own feelings and encourage your child to talk about their feelings. But it is so important because teenagers, especially teenage girls, tend to keep everything inside. Boys tend to exhibit it in behavior that's not appropriate many times, but girls tend to keep things inside. So it's very important that we try as best we can as parents to check in with our kids on their mental health and talk to them about it and set an example by as difficult as it can be talking about our own feelings, you know. And it can be very simple, you know. It can be things like, well, when I heard this, this is when I felt, or, you know, when I see you doing things like such and such, this is how I feel. Set an example as best you can.
Yeah. It's great advice. We're gonna take another break. When we come back, I want to talk about TikTok Tourette's, which is fascinating to me. It's a fascinating phenomena. But we'll be right back in a little bit. You're listening to the Awakened Parent Project.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, CourageToBeSeen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Are you wanting more for your life? Are you ready to create your life with confidence and contribution? We all have a gift to give to the world. Becoming you is that gift. In order to truly live your life, you have to become you on purpose and with intention. Leah Rowling supports you in becoming you using the B Method, consistently producing results for hundreds of entrepreneurs and business owners. For more information, visit leahrowling.com.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com. What did you say?
Everybody, we are back talking about teens and social media use. I'm joined by Richard Capriola, who has for over a decade treated adolescents and adults diagnosed with substance abuse issues. But today we are talking about social media and maybe like social media abuse, because it can become addictive, which we've already said. But before we hop on to the last portion of this, or last half of our time today, where can people find you?
The easiest way is to go to my book's website, which is www.helptheaddictedchild.com. Helptheaddictedchild.com. There's some blog articles that I have posted. One blog article is how the pandemic affected teenagers' use of substances. Another one is mental health and has the 10 questions to check in that I talked about earlier. There's also information for those who are interested in my book, The Addicted Child, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Substance Abuse, which is about 100 pages because I know parents are busy, but helps parents get a better understanding of adolescent substance abuse and particularly the warning signs, because so many parents miss the warning signs of a teenager who's using a substance. So those warning signs are very in the book, along with a number of important resources and other information. And there's a link on the book's website that'll take you to Amazon, where the book's available as a Kindle and as a paperback. So the easiest thing to do is go to helptheaddictedchild.com and read the resources that are there. And if you want a copy of The Addicted Child, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Substance Abuse, just click on the Amazon and it'll take you directly to Amazon.
The other thing that I loved about your book is that it's also sort of like a Bible for substances. Like, you go through each type of substance, whether it's inhalant or an amphetamine, or you go through all, you list all of them, because that was always my concern when my kids were younger, was that I was a new substance was going to, you know, come into being, and I wasn't going to know about it. Because it's so, you know, it always starts sort of in the dark hidden corners, right? And I wasn't going to know what it was or the nicknames for it. So you do a really good job of outlining all of that, so that you, it's sort of like a dictionary for substances, and that's hugely helpful.
Well, thank you. You know, parents know about alcohol and marijuana and some of these other drugs, but they may not be familiar with some of these other drugs that are out there on the street that kids have access to. So just a very brief understanding and a little bit of knowledge about them, I think, helps parents feel hopefully a little bit more confident and more informed about what's out there, because these drugs are out there. They're readily available to kids. When we ask them, how easy is it for you to get these drugs? They tell us it's no problem. Mm-hmm. And these kids don't think they're very harmful either. So the more information we have as parents, I think knowledge is power, and hopefully we feel a little bit more confident and less afraid about this topic.
Yeah. And just one more laud about your book is that it really, like, if you are struggling with a child who is addicted or has a substance abuse issue, it's written very empathetically. It really makes you feel like you're not alone, like you get it. And yeah, it's a phenomenal book. I think every parent should have it. That's what I said the last time you were on. Like, everybody needs to have this book.
Thank you.
Okay. So back to social media. So you actually posed this question in our prep, and I'd heard about it. And I'd read about it, and I kind of thought, well, this just must be some you probably have a better word for it, but the TikTok Tourette's, like a copycat. That's what I was thinking, like a copycat sort of syndrome. But I think, is there more to it than that? Like, what's going on? First, explain what it is.
Well, TikTok Tourette's is a term that really, I think, came out of the pandemic, when professionals began to notice that teenage girls, especially girls, started to mimic some of the behaviors that we see associated with Tourette's, which is characterized by short phrases, same type of phrases, repeating them over and over and over again. Sometimes it's accompanied by jerking or flapping movements. Tourette's, when it's actually diagnosed, affects about one out of 160 some kids. But it seems that a lot of this behavior was mimicking behavior. It was mimicking some of the behaviors that we see with children who have legitimately been diagnosed with Tourette's. And it seems that much of this mimicking behavior was seen on social media applications. So again, bringing in the social media applications. So teenagers started to mimic some teenagers started to mimic these behaviors that that children diagnosed with Tourette's are exhibiting, and it sort of was, you know, okay, sort of this thing on social media where they were mimicking these behaviors, and sort of grew to this term of TikTok Tourette's. Mm-hmm. It was primarily, I think, on TikTok where they were exhibiting this mimicking behavior.
So that was my primary question was, is it mimicking? Or, I mean, obviously Tourette's is a nothing to joke about,
right.
For people who experience and live with it and family members and parents of children with it. So I'm not trying to make light of that in any way, shape or form, because it is debilitating for people who have it. But so it's not, because when I was reading the article, I'm like, wait, are you trying to say that this is contagious? Because I don't believe that was the case, but it was just watching. So what you're saying is watching it repetitively, it's almost like you pick up the habit.
Well, or you enact what you think is funny. You know, some of these behaviors, and you put it
on. It's not funny.
Right. It's not funny. It's very demeaning. It's very hurtful. You know, because this is a very serious condition that affects many families, and to make fun of it or to mimic it on a TikTok video that you think is funny, and then you get positive reinforcement, positive feedback from, you know, your fans out there. You know, it's sort of sad when you stop and think about it. But it was mimicking behavior. I think some parents got concerned about it and took their child in for an evaluation to their physician. And it was discovered, well, this is not really a serious situation of Tourette's. It's mimicking behavior that often accompanies TikTok, but often accompanies Tourette's. But it pretty much boiled down to a lot of kids you know, mimicking these behaviors and putting them on TikTok. And then, unfortunately, in some cases, they get positive reinforcement, positive feedback, because kids think it's funny.
Yeah, well, that's awful.
Yeah,
it is. So if I would also like you to, if you could share some advice on, it's like you gave us recommendations for Mayo Clinic. But if you have any advice for parents on how to actually begin the conversation about limiting screen time, so we're not even talking about social media, just screen time, which obviously became a necessity during lockdown. I mean, this is how kids, like you said, stayed connected to their friends. This is how they went to school. And so now to come in and say, okay, well, you know what, honey, now, you know, you're in school in person and you get to see your friends and you have your extracurricular activities. How do you start to have that conversation with your child, regardless of their age? Because like you said, they can get really upset. It's like taking candy from a baby. Like it.
I think first of all, it has to be age appropriate. You know, you'll have different requirements for a child that's 13 or 14 and just starting on social media than you will for, you know, a high school junior or senior. And also every child's different. You know your child better than anyone. You know their maturity level. You know how responsible or irresponsible they tend to be. And all of those factor into decisions that as a parent you must make on your child's use of social media. But regardless of all of that, I think it's appropriate to have a conversation with your child about what your expectations are as a parent. What do you find as appropriate and inappropriate use? What do you see as appropriate and inappropriate times for when they're be on social media? You know, do you discourage use during family gatherings? Do you discourage use during mealtime? Do you discourage use before homework? homework is done? Do you discourage use, after a certain hour at night when they should be sleeping? And you have those conversations, not in terms of punishing or threatening, but in terms of expressing your concerns about their use. You know, this is a conversation where you're sharing your concerns and what you think is appropriate and inviting them to give you their impression of it. They may not agree with you and you may not agree with them, but if you have this conversation, which starts from, you know, this is my concern, now you tell me your concern and we'll talk about these things. The more you can talk about these things with your child, the more likely you are to reach a common ground and not get in a position where you have to, you know, come in and take action that the child perceives as punishment. So the earlier you can have these conversations, open conversations with your child about social media, whether it's the apps that they're on or the time limits or what's appropriate behavior, I think the more you can have these conversations, I think that's productive. And the more often you can check in with your child on how things are going. Sometimes, you know, we'll just sort of let our kids go off into social media and we don't check in on them from time to time to see how things are going. And they may not want us doing that. They may object to it, but I think as a parent, you know, there are things we can do to keep tabs on what our kids are doing, but certainly start with the conversation of approaching it from a curiosity point of view. You know, try to learn your child's point of view on this. Don't just share them your point of view, but really listen to what they're saying and what they're feeling.
Yeah, I mean, countless stories of parents whose young children, not even teenagers, who have attempted suicide, not even realizing that they were being cyberbullied because they just didn't think to ask, you know. And that's the tragic part of it, is that if a child is being tormented and they feel that they don't have any resources. Like, you know, a teacher isn't going to help, or if I complain, the kid's only going to get meaner. I mean, it's just like regular bullying, but it's almost worse because they're behind a facade, and they can say and do whatever they want. They feel, you know, impervious to any punishment because it's just it's just on the internet.
Yeah, and that's where we get back to the initial early stage conversations that we have with children prior to the use of social media, and the need to check in with them from time to time so that they understand that not everything on social media is accurate. Not everything is something that they can believe in. And if they have any concerns, that they can talk to you about them and just check in from time to time to see how things are going, because there may be something that they're doing or seeing on social media that's troubling to them. And they may tend to keep it inside. And perhaps you just checking in from time to time to see how things are going. You know, they may tell you everything's great, everything's fine, don't worry about it. Or they may actually say, you know, something that's really bothering them. But you give them an opportunity at least to talk about it.
Have you ever heard of the term Finsta?
No.
Okay, so Finsta is your fake Instagram.
Okay.
And it's sort of where you put your like you don't post there all the time, but it's sort of like the ludicrous sort of part of your life, or your like the things you don't want, like, because you can, it's usually a private account and you only have like a certain amount of people that are your Finsta followers. But yeah, I didn't know what a Finsta was until my youngest was a senior in high school. And I was like, Finsta. And then she explained it all to me. So that's the other sort of disturbing thing about social media, is all of these sort of phantom accounts or fake accounts. And as you said, you know, telling our kids that, you know, so much of this is not real. I mean, all you have to do is get on Instagram, and I'm not good at this at all, but you know, it's got hundreds of filters, right? I don't know how to use filters. I actually don't do my own social media. My daughter does it for me. Because what do I know about social media, right? But yeah, it's fascinating that there's still this component of looking at what somebody posted with two or three filters and touch-ups and, you know, teeth whiteners and blemish removals and all of that, and just go, oh wow, look at her life, or look at his life, you know, and it's comparativitis is what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's an illusion.
It's an illusion.
Yeah, it's an illusion that sometimes because they're kids, they don't understand that, and then they start to compare themselves to it, and you know, it just. It's all an illusion in many cases. The other issue is, you know, some of these kids will try to make their sites private, and they will be able to determine who has access to seeing them. And and maybe that's appropriate. It's hard, you know, maybe it is. But as a parent, you need to let your child know that as far as you're concerned, there are no private, you know, sites for them, that you expect to have access to all of their postings that they have, because they will tend to try and make them private, and then gather a select group of peers that have access to their sites. And if you're not one of those, you have no idea what's being posted.
Agreed. So, Richard, what are your final thoughts? What are your final recommendations for parents to help them make these decisions and recommendations regarding social media and their teens?
I would say first, learn about these social media apps. Learn what Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok are all about. Go into the apps, be familiar with them so that you know what they're doing. You're a little bit knowledgeable about how they work and what they are. Have conversations with your child about social media apps. Model good social media behaviors, whether you're, you know, using your applications for emails or text messages or whatever, you know, model appropriate behavior. And by that, I mean, you know, if you don't expect your child to be texting while you're having family meals, then you shouldn't be doing it either. You know, if you're sitting around at night all the time glued to your iPhone or to your tablet or whatever, they're gonna model that behavior too. So model good, appropriate behavior, and then have conversations with your children about these social apps from time to time. Check in with them, see what's going on, see how they're feeling about it. You know, see if they think that there's anything appropriate that they've seen. Encourage them to share with you, you know, what they're experiencing and what they're seeing, and then just try to stay on top of things as much as you can.
Yeah. I mean, I now that you bring that up, it just reminded me of the probably half a dozen times that my girls came to me concerned about what they saw their friends posting and saying, you know, Mom, I'm worried about her. Yeah. I think maybe she has an eating disorder, or I think there might be something going on at home, and to not be afraid to, you know, go to, and my youngest daughter did. They went to the school counselor and sort of, you know, dare I say, snitched, but they were that concerned about one of their friends. And it was all just, a lot of it was because of what she was posting on social media. So, so we can take care of each other too, not just our own kids, but.
That's a very good point. And we should be taking care of each other. And you know, I think that kids are very perceptive. They pick up on things that other kids are doing. So that's a great example of how, you know, our kids can use social media to pick up on things and maybe help somebody who's struggling.
Yeah. So Richard Capriola, he is the author of, oh my gosh, I can't, The Addicted Child. It's like, I know this book. And you can get it on Amazon, or you can go to his website, helptheaddictedchild.com, and you can get it hardcover, you can get it on Kindle. Like I said before, I highly recommend this book for every parent. I know we were talking about social media today, but it's a fabulous book to have as a resource. And thank you again, Richard, for coming back and being on the show and talking to us about social media today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to the program and for participating in our discussion, which I hope was very helpful for a lot of people. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. I hope it was. So remember, everybody, I say this all the time, parenting is not about perfection. It's about communication, presence. But one more thing, I'd like you to consider that maybe parenting is about allowing your children to also be your awakening. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for being a part of the Awakened Parent Project. My goal with this show is to help us all become more compassionate and engaged parents by diving into the many techniques and ideologies of the conscious parenting community. This is a safe space to embark on a practical and spiritual journey of self-exploration and expand our ideas about conscious parenting. Got thoughts, questions, ideas? I want to hear from you. Reach out to me if there's a topic you'd like to hear covered on the show or to share your conscious parenting story by visiting susandolce.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.